Hello.
Hello. How's your bread?
It's good. I will have to go get it out of the oven in 11 minutes.
Okay.
But it was on its first. I'm baking it in. I just got a Dutch oven. Okay. And so I'm baking it in the Dutch oven. And I had to do 30 minutes with the lid on and then 20 minutes with the lid off. And I'm trying it with whole wheat flour. So we're very excited about the potential whole wheat bread that we might be getting. I think I might have over, you know how you're supposed to let it sit on the counter and
I
like get all
overproofed
bubbly?
it.
I think I overproofed it. We'll see. I'm a little bit because it said like you can leave it overnight, but then I'm like, and I did that, but then it's been like 13 hours and I'm like, maybe that's a little too long. I don't know.
When I tell you this, it's coming from the place of a woman who lives with a bread man. Okay. Bread is bread. And every loaf that he has made, he's just like, oh, this isn't a good loaf. Oh, it's whatever. And I'm over there like, yeah, it's awful. This is
Literally, no,
terrible.
that's literally Chris. He's laying in bed right now and he's like, I smell bread. And I'm just like, yeah, well, it's gonna be done in a few minutes and I think it's bad. And he's like, I think it'll be good. I'm gonna have it for breakfast. I'm like,
People that
okay.
say Shrek is love, Shrek is life, bread is bread.
Bread
Okay.
is bread. You're
Bread
right.
is bread.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are Mediocre
Mediocre
Content.
Content.
And we're finally going to have an October-based podcast in October.
Yes.
Now that we're
We're
halfway
doing
through.
great. It's good. October is happening. Spooky season is upon
Spooks.
us.
Blair has decorated her house.
I have decorated my house. It's looked better than it ever has. And we really enjoy in the evenings. Like the neighborhood that I'm living in is amazing because everyone is going all out for Halloween and I am here for it. I
So
have
cute.
seen cauldrons in the front yard. I have seen many a Grim Reaper statues.
Nice.
All of this, the 12-foot skeletons. There's multiple people that have 12-foot skeletons in their yard. And I'm like, this is the neighborhood I was meant to live in
They also have
because
the little minis that they're
they
selling
do.
now. Very cute. Very cute.
I've seen those. It's just, it's a good little time
I
over here.
enjoy looking at my neighbor's house because they have a skeleton, not a like a 12-foot skeleton or thing, but they have a skeleton on the tree and the kids change his pose every day.
I love that
It's
for
very
them. That's
cute.
adorable.
It's definitely good. We're
Yeah.
doing the trunk or treat next week. We're gonna
Nice.
decorate the truck with our
Nice.
giant dinosaur blow up. It's gonna be great.
Our neighborhood is doing that. I think we're going to just wait and do and see
Like
like what kind
regular
of
Halloween.
regular trick or treating happens, because that's less work for us.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I did get to go to the at-home store to do all that, which is very,
Oh,
very good. But they have
love
everything
the
on
at-home
sale
store.
now because
Oh,
it's getting
yes.
closer to Halloween. So they had a lot
That's
of like
true.
discounts. And if you don't know, I don't know how many people know what an at-home store is. They're very, I feel like it's very like few and far between. I've seen them.
Yeah,
They
it's an
are getting
East
more
Coast thing
popular.
for sure, I feel.
But they do a lot of discounts there. So if you're looking for like decorations, they have all types of stuff, but do a lot of discounts. So it's like
Yeah.
I guess I would compare it to HomeGoods almost, but steeper
Yeah,
discounts.
HomeGoods, TJ Maxx in that realm for sure. But yeah, I mean, we were in Walmart and they have all the Christmas stuff out now.
Oh, don't even get me freaking started.
I know.
Can't even have nothing. Can't have one
Nothing.
month for nothing.
Literally.
Do they
It's
just forget about Thanksgiving?
Oh yeah, Thanksgiving is no longer. It's just like a fun day we get off work. It's not even acknowledged as a holiday anymore.
I mean, they have a whole parade about it, you know? Like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
I
I hope
love
they
that.
bring K-pop back to the parade this year because I love seeing ENHYPEN last year. That's a different part of me that
No, you're not
we'll talk
wrong.
about later.
And like BTS is about to,
Yeah,
they're all,
2025.
yeah, we're getting there. We're
Yeah.
getting there.
The
I've been in
army is returning.
contact with Carol and
Contact is established.
we're gearing up.
Have you seen all the amazing stuff Stray Kids been doing? Of course not.
Maybe,
No, they
not
did
really.
literally, I think it was a remake of Bye Bye Bye
Oh,
at
cute.
the, is it the AMAs?
Probably.
MMAs? I don't know. There's
Yeah.
a lot of abbreviations, but they did it and it was fantastic. And they're
Nice.
literally killing it out there. I'm so proud of
Very
them.
good. Very good. Very good.
All stays around the world.
Yeah.
Woo.
I've been on One Direction nostalgia TikTok. Especially with all this
Just,
controversy
I
about
know.
Liam. I don't know if
Ugh.
we need to go into it right now. We might save it for later, but
I'm honestly
it's hot.
so pissed that Liam has ruined every prospect of a reunion tour single-handedly.
I think he's delusional
You
in the
think?
worst in the worst way.
You think? He has like leader complex or like, you
Literally.
know,
No, literally.
or like main character syndrome or something.
Well, I think he's just really insecure.
Agreed.
Yeah. And I think he's like jealous of all the other boys and therefore makes him, well, and I think some industry professionals made him promises that
Sure.
he didn't realize that it was like his responsibility to fulfill, because like if you want to be the next Justin Timberlake, then you need to like actually do the work to
I
do
like how the
it.
comparison is Justin Timberlake. Is that what we're
I
going
is
with?
that not like the
I mean,
vibe? I feel like
okay,
that's
all
Liam's
right.
vibe. I don't know. I mean,
Ugh.
also, I saw this girl say that like Harry and Niall and Zayn have all like written the majority or like co-written the majority of
Yeah.
their songs and have been very involved in their music. Liam on his album only wrote two, and of the like however many there are, I don't even know.
I'm getting distracted by your son splaying out his feet and looking in between them. I'm not gonna lie, I
Yeah.
love it when he does that.
Oh,
Sorry.
yes. No, it's okay.
Bad son. Just a human back there. Just
No,
splaying your feet.
there are no tiny humans, just tiny
No.
cats.
My favorite thing is when lynx or the cats spread their toes and they it's
Speaking of
gross.
cats, I
Yes.
Chris
Okay.
did the meanest thing to me the other day. He took me into Petco,
Oh.
and there was the SPCA had little kittens in there, and he didn't let me take one home.
Oh, the
It was
agony.
so rude. I had to
Oh.
rip myself away from, and there was like two little calico girlies, and they were so cute.
That's so cruel.
And one little
Can't even
cute.
breathe.
I needed them, Kirsten. I don't know if you
I
understand.
agree.
I
I
the urge to be a crazy cat lady
say
is
less.
so strong.
Nope.
And
Yep.
one cat, like, so there was a sign that I said there were supposed to be two cats in the little cube, and one, they were brother and sister, and one of them got adopted and the other one didn't. And I'm like, how could you do that? You have to take both. You can't just take one.
It is very hard. No,
I
genuinely.
wanted to take her home just because she didn't, her brother got adopted and she's probably depressed now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree. Absolutely. No, that literally has happened to us. There's like a it's like a pet superstore, I think that's what it's called. And we didn't know. I was about to, sorry for the TMI listeners,
Yeah.
but I was getting ready for my wax and I was very early and they had the pet superstore that was like right there. And we're like, oh, we'll just walk in. We've never been in one before. Similar thing. They had the whole adoption crew out there on this
Yeah.
random day.
Yeah.
And we walked in, and I can from floor to ceiling for like three aisles is just cats. And I'm like, you have got to be joking. And not only that, there was cats floor to ceiling, and they were still bringing cats
Oh
from the
my
shelter
God.
actively coming into the store. And I'm like,
Ugh.
this is horrible.
So
This
this
is
is the
not good.
diabolical part about this particular instance is that so the way that the Petco was set up is like you walk in and the back of the cages are like towards you. So unless you're like actively looking or you see it on your way out, you really wouldn't know. But Chris like honed in on that when we walked in
Naturally.
and immediately like led me over to that. And I'm like, this is
Torture.
diabolical and not okay.
No.
Okay. And he's like, you have two beautiful cats at home that love you. I'm like, yes, but do you see the how pathetic these cats look? I need them to give them a better life.
That's
They can't
right.
just live in this cage anymore.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I have my beautiful babies at home. They would love another sibling, except for Cougar. she would not.
Well, and
Cougar says, okay. I don't even go, I only like the ones you got.
Well, and based on Salem's reaction to the stray cat that came up to the sliding glass door, I don't know if we necessarily need another cat, but I need another cat.
I mean, they deal with Lynx. I feel like your boys would be fine.
They would be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should get like two girls to go with the two boys.
You want four?
Yeah.
Can I tell you, when I leveled up to three, that was enough chaos in my house where I genuinely, as much as I joke, I don't think I could handle another one right now.
No, I know. And I'm very much kidding because like we're only allowed
very
to have
much
two.
Because
we're only allowed
know?
To have two pets. Like one, me, like you're only allowed to have one pet on the plane with you. And like to get off this island, we need to do a plane to like move to our next place. So like really we can't get any pets until we like move back to the main continental United States. But anyway, whatever.
Besides that all depressing news, would you like to disclaim?
Yes. This goes out to all of the cats trapped in SPCA. I am coming for you. It will be fine.
Don't you worry. I'll have a farmstead with your name on it.
That's right. That's my retirement plan. Is I'm just
gonna trust
have, like,
in our compound.
I'm gonna have like a beautiful yes in our compound.
In our compound.
Yeah. No, we're gonna have like a chicken coop, but it's just cats.
It's just cats. Absolutely. Yeah.
And they have like little heaters and in there for them to like snuggle up with in the winter. Yeah, it's gonna be good. All right. Now then, if you don't know already, we have no idea what we're talking about. And we literally are just two girlies out here doing the best we can. So, you know, don't take what we say too seriously. Just like live, laugh, love with us. It's fine.
Well, you're lucky you got another episode this week. So.
That's right. No, it's fine. So, you know, do your own research. Fact check us, please. We deserve it. And with that, I almost was like, live from New York, it's Saturday night.
We don't own the rights to that.
No, we don't. I don't know. All right, we're just having a morning.
It's great. Well, you're having a morning. I'm actually having an afternoon.
You're right. That is correct. All right. So I'm going to do the good news because that's what I signed up for. mercury pollution from human activities is declining with a 10% drop in emissions, says MIT scientists. Congratulations, us.
Nice.
Finally decreased some pollution. Good for
us.
Huge. The unexpected reduction in human-driven pollution led to a 10% decline in mercury concentrations in the air. For the new study, researchers analyzed measurements from all 51 available monitoring stations in the Northern Hemisphere and found a steep decline between 2005 and 2020. Is it all due to the pandemic? Unclear.
That's 15 years of data, though.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's really good. Yeah, and it's 2020 was the start of the pandemic, so I feel like it couldn't have all happened in like
that's
year.
Good, though. Yeah.
They used two separate modeling methods to determine what is driving that trend. Both techniques pointed to a decline in mercury emissions from human activity as the most likely cause. Global inventories, on the other hand, have reported the opposite trends.
Oh.
These inventories estimate atmospheric emissions using models that incorporate average emission rates of polluting activities and the scale of these activities worldwide.
Oh.
Quote, our work shows that it is very important to learn from actual on-the-ground data to try and improve our models and these emissions estimates. So I guess basically they're saying it's like a tool problem and not necessarily that we have increasing emissions. I don't know. This is very relevant for policy because if we are not able to accurately estimate past mercury emissions, how are we going to predict how mercury pollution will evolve in the future?
Fair enough.
Due to lack of additional data from global monitoring stations and limitations in our understanding of mercury pollution, the researchers couldn't pinpoint a definitive reason for the mismatch between the inventories and the recorded measurements. Mercury emissions are moving in the right direction and could continue to do so, which is heartening to see. But this was as far as we could get with Mercury. We need to keep measuring and advancing the science, adds Noel Salin, an MIT professor. Feinberg and Salin are joined on the paper by an international team of researchers that contributed mercury measurement data and statistical methods to the study. The research was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
Nice.
So why the mercury mismatch? Like, why are we seeing these conflicting measurements? A global treaty that aimed to cut mercury emissions, a potent neurotoxin that enters the atmosphere from sources like coal-fired power plants and small-scale gold mining, was signed in 2013 and went into force in 2017. The Minamata Convention calls for an evaluation every 5 years. The first meeting of its 128 signatories, including the US, EU, China, and Russia, coincided with disheartening news reports that the global inventories of mercury emissions had increased despite international efforts to reduce them. So that was obviously very puzzling.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still asking the question, what is actually happening to mercury in the atmosphere? Do you hear the meow?
I can't hear the meow, but I see the cat floating in the air. For anyone who doesn't know, Blair is now called Baker Blair. And it should be specifically Bread Baker Blair, because she's made her first loaf today.
I did.
And she now gets to try it. Godspeed.
Here we go.
Little interlude for the bread. The good news is bread is bread. Pretty dang good bread. See? Didn't even matter. Listen, she is so upset because it didn't look like her Pinterest board, but I'm going to tell you right now, I bet that bread slaps.
It's good bread. It's good bread. It's not the best bread. Like, I feel like for the listener, I did overprove it.
Proving is hard.
It doesn't have like the little big opening bubbles in it.
It looks so good.
But it is hearty. It's a hearty bread.
I love it so much. I also like that he took the cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, Jinx.
They're both out in the hallway, just like flooping around.
I love it so much.
Okay.
Good news is the bread is good. Yeah.
Good news is bread is good. Mercury, they still have no idea what's going on.
We're confused about that, but bread is bread.
Mm-hmm. Can't confirm. I'm going to finish eating my little piece of bread here.
Okay.
Please enjoy this ASMR chewing.
I can't even hear you chewing. It just sounds like you have something in your mouth.
Great.
Oh, man. I could tell you for certain that there is never a time I'm interested in baking bread, but there is always a time I'm interested in eating bread.
That's fair. My mom was on a bread baking kick about 2 Christmases ago. And
we measure it in holidays. How many Lincoln memorials is that?
No, but it's like relevant to the story because she sent us a loaf of bread that she baked for Christmas.
Christmas, okay.
And because we lived in California and mm-hmm. she lived in Virginia, it had mold on it. Anyway, we told her it was fine though. Mom, don't listen to this.
I was about to say, now you've just outed yourself if she listens to our podcast.
It's fine.
It's fine.
You can't even figure out how to listen to it on Spotify. It's fine.
Also just dissing your mom on the podcast.
Sorry, she knows. Mom. She knows she's bad with technology. She knows.
She knows.
All right.
Good gravy.
What?
Nothing. Nothing.
Okay. Where were we?
Modeling is tricky.
All right. So modeling mercury emissions is especially tricky. First, mercury is the only metal that is in its liquid form at room temperature. Right, Kirsten?
Yes, your favorite.
That's the only one that I allow.
The other metals need to be in solid form, period.
Okay, but sometimes mercury is also a gas, so.
I don't want to hear it. Anyway, so it has unique properties. Moreover, mercury that has been removed from the atmosphere by sinks like ocean or land can be re-emitted later, making it hard to identify primary emission sources. At the same time, mercury is more difficult to study in laboratory settings than other air pollutants, specifically due to its toxicity, because you can't be around that. That's why there's no mercury in thermometers anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there is also a much smaller network of mercury monitoring stations compared to other polluting gases like methane and nitrous oxide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're struggling with monitoring mercury. It's okay, though, mm-hmm. because... researchers use two modeling methods, biogeochemical box modeling and chemical transport monitoring, to explore possible causes of the decline. Box modeling was used to run hundreds of thousands of simulations to evaluate a wide array of emission scenarios. Chemical transport modeling is more computationally expensive, but enables researchers to assess the impacts of meteorology and spatial variations on trends in selected scenarios. For instance, they tested one hypothesis that there might be an additional environmental sink that is removing more mercury from the atmosphere than previously thought. The models would indicate the feasibility of an unknown sink of that magnitude.
Nice.
So their work underscores the importance of long-term mercury monitoring stations, and many stations the researchers evaluated are no longer operational because of lack of funding.
Dang. That's science in a nutshell, to be honest.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
While their analysis couldn't zero in on exactly why emission inventories didn't match up with actual data, they have a few hypotheses. One is that global inventories are missing key information from certain countries. For instance, the researchers resolved some discrepancies when they used more detailed regional inventory from China, but there was still a gap between observations and estimates. In addition, it's difficult to determine how long it takes the pollutant to be released into the atmosphere from discarded products like thermometers or scientific equipment. In the future, researchers from multiple countries, including MIT, will collaborate to study and improve models they use to estimate and evaluate emissions. This research will be influential in helping and that project move the needle on monitoring mercury. So, I know this wasn't like great news, but it's definitely good news because at least they've identified the problem, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's science in general. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times you have hypotheses and you have data, but in order to understand if your data is working or if your experiment is working, you have to have the data that tells you whether
exactly.
it's in the right realm or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that we're working on it. It's good that we've got something, and now there's a place for them to move from. If they get freaking funding, which is never guaranteed, but it's still on the list.
Right. And the thing is, too, it's a really good, this, I think, article is a really good example of, like, science in general, like
yes.
you said. You know, like, things aren't always perfect, but mm-mm. we're moving in a generally positive direction, and that's yeah. what matters.
Exactly. I think overall, outside of it smells like something's burning in my house. In general,
Tyler
you're supposed to be meal prepping. Hopefully it's going better than it smells. But basically, I think emissions overall have been going down in general. Not like a steady decline,
yeah.
but I think
yeah.
overall there have been enough changes, which has been really good.
Agreed.
And as spooky as emissions are, spookier still is going to be our cryptid series that we're going to continue. Actually, this is a series that Blair started way back when she did her episode on Bigfoot, which was amazing.
I did.
Yes. So technically, you may not have remembered that we had a part one, but there is a part one. So feel free to go into the archives and mm-hmm. listen to her part one cryptid series on Bigfoot. Today is another venture, and we're going to be doing a couple of these through the month of October. I think we also have one in November, and then we will also have one in December.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Yes, we shall.
So for this structure, I've decided, since I'm doing them kind of back to back in a way for my episodes, they are going to have a similar structure. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of story time, And then after the story time in our second half, we're going to actually go into a little bit of the history of the cryptid and give you guys an overview of how some of these legends came to be. So if you read the title, you'll know that today's cryptid is going to be Nessie. She's very famous, lots of information on her, but also not a lot of information, which is why it's a little bit spooky wooky. So let's dive into our first story time. Our first spooky encounter, and it actually happens in June of 1965. So obviously a very hot summer day. There's a retired police superintendent by the name of Ian Cameron, and he's just fishing. He's on the south shore of Loch Ness, just bringing in the dough, I guess. I don't know if he was actually having a whole lot of success. They said generally on that day, they were pulling up brown trout and kind of facing towards what's called the Urquhart Bay. I probably butchered that, I apologize. But as Ian was casting out another one of his lines, out of the corner of his eye, he thought he saw something kind of break the surface of the water. And it was just an instance. It was literally as soon as he blinked, it was completely flat again. So he originally thought, you know, just the trick of the eye, didn't think too much of it, kind of thought he imagined it, kind of crested the surface, and then he looked and it was gone. So he just kept fishing, and he kind of kept his eyes a little sharper on the water until a large black object began to actually surface. And again, just as quickly as it broke the water, it submerged. But this time he actually saw it. He said it happened over a few moments where he would depict this object as kind of whale-like, and it would just kind of break the surface and then resubmerge. And if you looked too fast, you would miss it completely. So anyway, Ian calls his friend Willie Fraser, a man who'd already had a sighting on Loch Ness just about a year ago. And they end up both going over to watch the object that was drifting towards them. And it came about 250 to 300 yards from them. And to this day, Ian says he understands that if people don't believe him, that's just the way it is. But the proof for him lies just under the surface of the lock.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. So that's story number one.
I love that.
First encounter. Our next story comes from another beautiful day on the lock from a man named Richard White. He's kind of cruising along the lock, and as he's passing the water, he quickly glances out. He's like in his car. So there, hold on. Geography. Around the lock, there's a road. So he's cruising around. There are driving. But the thing is, from my understanding, you're kind of going through a forested area. Like if you're in the road, there's like trees and then the actual lock, right? So you're driving sure. around it, but you don't necessarily have a clear view every single time that you're driving around. Okay.
Sure.
So he's cruising around the lock, enjoying the beautiful day. As he's passing the water, he quickly glances out his window, and similar to Ian, something catches his eye. He thinks it's a rock formation, just kind of rising or sort of boiling off the water.
It's a mermaid.
He glances quickly back to the road, and just a second later, looks back, and there's three black humps that are now formed on the surface. Richard stops his car immediately, which is not very safe to do, and pulls over in disbelief. Other drivers are obviously outraged at this man who's slamming on his brakes and just like swerving to the side. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Richard says, I've got better things to do. So he pulls off, he grabs his camera, and he races to capture photos of the object in the water. But while taking photos, other passersby also start to take notice, and they're like, hey, maybe this crazy guy actually is onto something. And they also begin to pull over to view the lock. All just kind of like, what is it? Is it real? Is it rocks? Is it whatever? By the time the object had resubmerged under the water, Richard stated that he knows 100% that he saw the real Loch Ness Monster.
Wow.
Wow. He didn't share any photos that I know of, which is kind of rude.
I agree.
But yeah, anyway. Yeah, it's getting weirder, right? A lot of people having similar experiences.
Yeah.
Then we meet Val Moffay, and she is no stranger to the lock. She's actually lived on the shore with her husband, Ron, for over 11 years. And she'd only been there a year in September of 1990 when she was kind of similar to Richard. She was driving back to the house and coming up on the side of the hill where you can kind of see the bay and view the lock pretty well. She crested the hill, looked out, and what do you think she saw? Those three lumps again. Huge lumps just on the
surface. A log.
A log with the bullfrog. And then, you know what I'm saying? It's a reference. Okay. Anyway.
It's good. You're good.
If anybody doesn't get the reference, I'm sorry. So just large lumps at the surface of the water. Almost at first, she said it kind of looked, though, like a boat had capsized and like flips upside down, if that gives you a size reference, though. So this isn't something that she was like on the top of a hill and saw like a pebble size surfacing. She saw like essentially a boat flipped over, right? Mm-hmm. She described the object as about 30 feet in length and 10 feet above the water. She also says that there was no mistaking it being there because the sky itself was clear and sunny. The water was a brilliant blue, and it had clear contrast with what was described as a very dark object on the surface. And looking closer, Val noted that it actually had a mixture of browns and greens in color. Wow. So she tried to focus back on the road because you should never take your eyes off for long enough to know that it's green and brown. lest That's right. you endanger the rest of humanity.
The subtext of this podcast is road safety.
I'm just trying to be safe, people, okay? Please keep your eyes on the road. Pull over, not hastily like Richard did with no warning, with right. actual turn signals and a slow right. descent to the shoulder, okay?
Please, God, use a blinker.
That's what it's there for. So anyway, Val practiced good road safety and focused back on the road ahead of her. And by the time she looked for a fourth time, Val, how many times? Anyway, she looked for a fourth time and it had completely vanished. Gone.
Yeah.
She states that she is 100% convinced it was Nessie. And not just that, but it was the monster everyone had been searching with. She is for sure that sighting right there is the one everybody else is talking about and everybody else has encountered, right? Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever you say, Val.
No, I got it. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Last story. 6 years after Val, on March 14th, 1996, a man by the name of Gary Campbell and an area manager for an insurance company that covered much of the Highlands, for some reason that detail is very important, was out doing paperwork around the lot and soaking in the lovely view. It was now spring, because that's what March is. And as he was working away, nice, Gary glanced briefly towards the lock because nobody just looks at the lock. They only glance and quickly look away just in case. And he looked... It's so weird, right? Anyway, he glanced briefly towards the lock and then he just locked on what appeared to be a large black hump on the surface. Mm. I mean, the visuals are all the same. How could you not all be talking? Doesn't matter. Blinked because that's what people do when they don't get a clear view of what they're looking at. He blinked and... similarly to everybody else's story, it just goes back under the water. It says, you sighted me and now I'm out. Deuces. So he watched for the object to surface again and disappear, and cursing himself for not having a camera like Richard did, even though he never shared his photos. And moments earlier, there was a family who just wandered along asking if they would take their picture along the lock. So he watched the lump and decided there was no way it could be a seal, and he didn't have a camera, and size and color wasn't fishy. And bottom line is, everybody's got the same kind of story, but not a single one of them has a viable photo, which is really annoying. And none of them can drive. And all of this is to say, Take your driving tests seriously, guys. Okay. We've got to be real careful on our roadways. All right.
Anyway. I would like to make
Yes.
Educated guess.
Okay.
On what the Loch Ness Monster actually is.
You want to do that now or do you want to do that at the end?
I mean,
a lot to go through.
That's true. I can do that at the end. It's fine. I'll hold my answer until I get all the information.
Hold it in. Don't look too close. It might, you know, dip below the surface. Just.
I also am imagining like, it's like the lock is Medusa and you can't like look it directly in its
right?
face.
They're like, oh,
because they're like, they look at it and then they're like, immediately look away. And I'm like, man, you need to like focus. Okay.
Now look, I understand like most people, that would be super weird, right? If you just like locked into everything you initially looked at, it'd be really weird, especially if you are driving. Now you're wrecked. Okay. You're done. You have flipped in a ravine.
Again, good road safety means that you need to put your blinker on. You need to pull over.
Also, your eyes should be locked with the road. Okay. We can't be, looking around at the scenery and the helm, you know?
Right.
Anyway, I say all of this, and I would also like to preface, this is going to be the less scary of the cryptids that we're going to do. I freaked myself out doing the research for the other ones, so enjoy it while you can.
Okay.
So they sound more mystical and kind of mythical more than scary, right? It's not like this thing has like come out of the lock and eaten people and taking their children. It's kind of cool like to think like- about.
It's like the community pet. It just like hangs out.
Yeah.
And if you see it from time to time.
It's cool. That's right. It's just like a feral cat. You're happy to see him and you're okay if you don't. It's
totally.
Yeah. And so generally, I would also say we're pretty much familiar with Nessie's antics and the overall story. But Loch Ness is actually the name of Nessie's supposed playground in the water, because it is situated at the eastern end of what's called the Great Glen. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the non-English version, so I apologize. I just don't want to butcher it. And this stretches southwest for about 23 miles or 37 kilometers from Inverness on the east coast, right to what is a village of Fort Augustus and halfway along the Great Glen. So it stretches pretty, it's a big body of water. And walking around the edge, there's lots of pebbles. Specifically, there is Dora's Beach. The distant shoreline vanishes in a blue blur of water and sky. And there's the narrow, deep glen there runs right through Scotland, completely east to west, following the line of the 380 million year old Great Glen Fault. And if you don't know what a fault line is, it's definitely the earthquake epicenter. It's just where two pieces of mass plates are separating from each other, and was carved out by glaciers during the last ice age, which is fun. I don't know if you can hear the grinding going on, but my husband is meal prepping, so I apologize.
Tell Tyler to calm it down.
We're talking about Nessie. Shush. It sounds horrendous. I swear
it doesn't sound that bad on my end, good. But I can definitely hear it. Like you hear like a blender.
Wonderful. Enjoy that, everyone. This trench-like landscape means, though, that Loch Ness is deep, reaching about 230 meters or 754 feet at its deepest point. And that's just north of the Urquhart Bay. Don't ask me how many Washington monuments that is. I didn't bring that calculation with me, but it's a lot. Okay.
Seems good.
These immense depths and remarkable length, though, mean that Loch Ness holds the largest volume of freshwater in the UK, and it holds more water than all of the lakes between England and Wales combined. So it's nice. Nothing to sneeze at. If something was going to hide there, it's got a great place to do so.
Yeah. Not to mention, just so everyone's aware, the land that is the UK and Wales is like not that much compared to like if you could, it's like a state in the United States, just to like put it in perspective for those of us who have never you know, who didn't do well in geography or whatever, you know.
That would be me also.
Yeah. Yeah.
So legend tells us that Loch Ness may have been created in anger. So this isn't something that just is like a fossil come to life, basically. There is an actual legend around it. Nessie was created in anger by the Celtic winter queen, goddess Darkbeara, or Caolleach Buer.
I'm going to let the Scottish people pronounce that because
let me
I
know
can't.
What I've messed up.
My Scottish is not up to snuff for this.
Definitely not. And when her maid Nessa was late to attend her duties, the queen was enraged. She was throwing a fit, and she transformed Nessa into a river, the River Ness. Nessa eventually managed to escape the confines of the river, stretching to become the deep waters of Loch Ness. Not very spooky, but she was turned into a body of water. Scholars of the Loch Ness monster do find a dozen references to Nessie in Scottish history in general, even dating back to AD 500, when local Picts carved a strange aquatic creature into standing stones near Loch Ness. So it's not like we're the first ones to come up with it, right? The earliest written reference to a monster in Loch Ness is a 7th century biography of St. Columba, the Irish missionary who introduced Christianity to Scotland. In AD 565, according to the biographer St. Columba, was on his way to visit the king of the northern Picts near Avernus when he stopped at Loch Ness to confront a beast that had been killing people in the lake. Not cute. Seeing a large beast about to attack another man, St. Columba intervened, invoking the name of God and commanding the creature to, quote, go back with all speed. And the monster retreated and never harmed another man, because that's making a lot of sense. So all of this information is really great, and it's a precursor to her legend. And we're going to get more into that later when we come back from our break.
Do you hate a quiet house?
Are you tired of listening to The Office in the background while doing the dishes?
Then you need mediocre content.
Listen to us giggle and rant about meaningless topics in the comfort of your own home.
Put us on in the background while cleaning your house, cooking, or even vacuuming.
We promise you won't miss anything important.
And you can always listen again.
Choose mediocre content for your background noise. Welcome back to the not so spooky cryptid episode about Nessie. So all the information that we went through previously are firsthand encounter testimonies, as well as the ancient lore of Loch Ness. However, obviously, there was kind of a craze around Nessie at one point, and there's multiple reasons why, but we're going to talk about a few of them and also a couple of hoaxes that happened as a result of the craze. And let me tell you, for all the people who are skeptical out there about cryptids, and they're like, this is just someone, you know, playing on the fears or the mind or the eyes of people, and they're really good at it and whatever.
Photoshop AI.
Right. In this case, you'd kind of be correct. So the first claimed sighting of the Loch Ness Monster in what we would consider modern times is the modern era of 1870. Okay.
So modern.
So modern. But so it's better than 565 AD. Okay.
You're not wrong.
Moved up a little.
Yeah.
D. McKenzie claimed to have seen something, quote, wriggling and churning up the water, which is just a very 1870s things to say, I feel.
It's called a wave. Get with it.
Right.
Whirlpool.
But throw it in the whirlpool. But it wasn't until a road, which I've talked about very intensely in the first part, was built alongside the shore, because that wasn't there forever. That was not there in 565 AD.
No way. No way.
No. It was completed, though, along that shore. And the tales of Nessie really started to kick off, because obviously you've got more people that are going around, pedestrians, drivers who are inappropriately not looking at the road, and you've got all of this traffic that is now churning around the lock. Well before people were just, you know, tromping through the woods and they're like, ah, water. Now they're going right around it pretty much every day on commute, right?
Sure.
So it provided an up-close view of the lock as of 1933. And on May 2nd, 1933, the Everness Courier, and if you know, does everybody know what a courier is?
Someone who carries things.
Okay, great. Reported that a local couple claimed to have seen, quote, an enormous animal rolling and plunging on the surface. Interesting.
Whale.
This became a media phenomena, when London newspapers sending correspondents all the way to Scotland and a circus, a real circus was offering a 20,000 pound reward to capture this random beast in the lock. It's wild. Okay. So after the 1933 sighting, interest obviously grew, especially after the couple claimed to have seen the beast also on land crossing the shore road.
Whoa.
It got real crazy.
Okay, but does it have legs?
Right.
That's what I need to know.
Is as good as mine.
All right.
Several British newspapers sent reporters to Scotland, including London's Daily Mail, which hired big game hunter Marmaduke Wetherell, which is quite the name.
Stop.
To capture the beast.
That sounds like a cartoon character.
I know. Are you made up? Because the Marmaduke I remember was in the comics section of the newspaper.
It's like, sir, who named you? That's crazy. Oh,
that's great. Sorry for anyone named Marmaduke. I didn't mean it visibly, but it's crazy.
It's crazy.
After a few days searching the lock, Wetherell reported finding footprints of a large four-legged animal, allegedly. In response, the Daily Mail. I know.
Hold on. One second.
Okay.
I'm still on Marmaduke. Hold on. First of all, my first inclination was like, what does his friends call him? Marm?
Marm.
But then I was like, the obvious second hit. Right. So the obvious nickname
Marma.
Duke there.
Okay. We don't even know this person. We're like, what would we nickname them if we were friends?
Marm.
Marma. No, the obvious answer is Duke. Or you could just call them by their last name. Like, just be like Wetherell, you know? Just eliminate the first. Well,
yeah.
So is Marma. Anyway. Because Duke found this four-legged animal, allegedly, the Daily Mail carried the dramatic headline, "Monster of Loch Ness is not legend, but a fact." That's what they rolled with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Daily Mail, I'm going to need to do some fact-checking, please.
Literally pump the brakes, okay? After the story broke, London newspapers sent their correspondents to Scotland, of course, and one even offered the 20,000 pound reward, again, for anyone who could capture said beast. So far, I would like to point out that no one has eyes on this thing. Okay, no one really has, like, locked into it. All they see are these random footprints that could be made by anything, and Marmalade over here doing the dirty and just being like, yep, it's real. And then Daily Mail, like media does, is like, oh my gosh, it's all fact because we found a rustling in the woods. Just want to point
Daily
that out.
Mail. Jeez. What are you doing?
April 21st, 1934. This is a year later. The London Daily Mail ran a photo. This is when it gets grit. Really crazy. They ended up running a photo that would forever change how Nessie was seen and defined. And you can find this photo today and look it up. And in fact, I encourage
you. Is it the one that's like black and white and it's like just the little... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was supposedly taken by respected London gynecologist of all things, Robert Wilson.
I have jokes.
Sure.
First one being Robert Wilson was like, you know what I know? I know a lot about a lot of things, but what I know most is about women. And Nessie is a woman and I will be finding her.
I know her.
Yeah.
If you're curious, no, he didn't. And is still to this day referred to as the surgeon's photograph for that reason. Because he, I guess, was a gynecological surgeon. It shows a half-submerged creature with a long, slender back, craned neck, and pointed face. Think of a a plesiosaur, if you will, to a point, if you.
Yeah, because know everybody knows what that is.
Just, I mean, whatever. Yeah, totally. It's common knowledge.
Yeah.
And it set off a craze. Everybody went nuts. And if you don't know, one specific group of people that went nuts are called cryptozoologists. And yes, there is a category for zoology and zoological finds specific to cryptid activity. Completely separate category.
Neat.
And it sent tourists to the Scotland Highlands so that people could see themselves with the Loch Ness Monster that was pictured in Robert's allegedly true and very real photo. Anyway, we'll jump back to that in a moment. Some would speculate that Nessie was indeed a solitary survivor of the long extinct plesiosaurs, and you can look those up. They're very popular associated with Nessie, so it won't be hard to find. And the aquatic plesiosaur were thought to have already died off with the rest of the dinosaurs about 65 million years ago. They assumed that Loch Ness was frozen solid during the ice ages. However, that this creature would have had to have made its way up the river Ness from the sea, because that's where they lived.
The sea
in the past 10,000 years, because again, Loch Ness is a freshwater body of water, and the ocean is salt water. It's very different.
No way.
And the plesiosaurs, believed to have been cold-blooded, would not have survived the frigid waters of Loch Ness, which is another kind of like, probably not. More likely, others suggest it was an archaeocyte, which is a primitive whale of a serpentine neck that is thought to have been extinct for about 18 million years. So there is something that's similar that might be able to have commanded that body of water over a long period of time in the cold. Skeptics argued that what people were seeing was setches or oscillations in the water surface caused by inflow of cold river water into slightly warmer water in the loch.
Mm-hmm.
Possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is, for 60 years, while people were trying to go back and forth about what this could possibly be based on a photo provided by this well-respected to-do doctor, and that this was considered absolute evidence. The fun part is, in 1994, it was established a hoax. Complete hoax. The creature in the photo was actually a toy submarine with a head and neck made from wooden putty. And after basically being ridiculed by Daily Mail for finding fake Nessie footprints, the big game hunter, Marmaduke Wetherell, decided to take revenge with this practical joke, giving a new famed Nessie photo to Wilson to sell to the Daily Mail.
Stop.
Mm-hmm. They were all in on it. They were, Duke, why? Wetherell, okay. What are we doing?
So first of all, 1994 was a big year in a lot of ways.
Indeed.
Not to mention I was born during it, so. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The Lion King came out that year.
Big things. Big things. And then Nessie was exposed as a hoax.
Right. This is devastating.
Yes. So since the surgeon's photo, there, of course, have been numerous other sightings of the legendary beast. In the spring of 1938, South African tourist G.E. Taylor filmed something in the lake for a whole 3 minutes. The film was then obtained by popular science Maurice Burton, and a single frame of the film was later published in his 1961 book. However, it was later concluded it was just a random floating object and was not alive and could not have been the creature, which is usually the consensus with a lot of these sightings, unfortunately.
Correct.
Then in July 1955, Peter McNabb took a photograph that appeared to depict two long black humps in the water. However, researchers again suspected that these apparent humps was that wave effect due to three fishing boats traveling closely together, which, if you've never seen the trail of a boat going through the water before, it's kind of like those really big undulations, and sometimes they cross over each other and they can cause these larger humps in the water. That's just waves. It's just waves.
Indeed.
1960, Tim Dinsdale, not Dimsdale, Order of the Dimsdale Dimmadome. This is Dinsdale. An aeronautical engineer filmed a hump that left a wake crossing Loch Ness. So many people believe that the hump was actually a boat after the contrast was increased in the photo. So all of that's happening. But by 1993, there was actually a documentary produced by Discovery Communications called Loch Ness Discovered, which used a digital enhancement of that photo from 1960. And a shadow was spotted by the person doing the enhancing in the negative, which had not been obvious in the developed film. By enhancing and overlaying the frames, he actually found what appeared to be the rear body part of a creature. So I don't know how much weight you want to put into that, but that's that. In the mid-60s, a 10-year observational survey was carried out by the Loch Ness Investigation Bureau, because that's how big it got, which recorded an average of 20 sightings per year. And this is why it's difficult, right? Because you have that many sightings. It's hard to suss out whether, yeah, it's that crazy because there's that many, or it's that crazy because everyone wants to think what they saw was what they thought they saw. You know what I mean?
So I think that the people who were saying the cold water, warm water undulation effect, I think they're onto something, because it must be very drastic.
It must be. Yeah.
For somebody to pull over their car to look at this, I feel like it must
multiple times.
Right. It must be a big thing.
And it happens in seconds.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's people look and then it's gone, and then it reappears and it's gone, which is wave action, which makes sense.
Right.
But it's got to your point, it's got to be intense wave action.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to be the voice of reason in this. Otherwise, amazing podcast. But I mean,
skeptics and critics. That's how these things stay alive.
Like, I feel like they're onto something. Yeah, because there's no, there. I mean, I have my theories. My like joke theories.
Sure.
I'll tell you about at the end.
So now in the 1970s, underwater photography is becoming a big thing. So what do they naturally try to do? They try to go underwater to take photos of Loch Ness.
Yes. The way that I would love to be an underwater photographer in the 1970s, and my sole job is to get on a boat and to go underwater in the loch and like try and find this monster.
That's like a thalassophobian's nightmare.
So good. So good.
Well, a lot of people felt the same. And so they also went out and tried to gather some kind of evidence under the water, since it clearly wasn't happening on top of the water very successfully. And they did happen to photograph what appeared to be a flipper. And that photo, of course, went public. Sonar explorations also started to gain hype. And that seems like a good idea to use to try and find something that large, because sonar will just ping off of it and give you a location tell you how big it is and whatever. The most notable ones, however, took place in 1987 and in 2003. Big gap in terms of exploration, but there was no success in either exploration feat. So,
okay.
Many more photos have, of course, been taken over the years. A lot of them have been discredited as fakes, unfortunately. In 2007, Gordon Holmes, who is a lab technician, filmed what he claimed was Loch Ness Monster, although a marine biologist said it was actually either an otter, seal, or water bird, which to me are three very different things to be confused with. I hate to say it, this marine biologist. Feel like I would know the difference between those three things individually to know. And then in 2011, a boat captain on Loch Ness photographed a sonar image of a 4.9-foot wide object, which appeared to follow his boat for several minutes. However, just a year later, this was discovered to be an algal bloom, which is so fun.
Stop.
I can't tell if people are like, no, it can't possibly be that. Or if there is something down there and they're like, we cannot let them know.
First of all, I have never heard of an aggressive algal bloom.
I'm gonna get you.
And like, how can you mistake that?
I know, exactly.
So like,
I know
they must know something that we don't know.
That's why it's hard, right? That's why cryptozoology is so randomly in
depth.
That's so
weird. With this stuff. Oh my God. I'm like less likely to think that it's an algal bloom because that's an obscene answer.
And I am less likely to think it's someone confusing an otter with a seabird, to be honest with you.
No, that's true.
Anyway, an impressive 1,141 sightings have been recorded to date, including 4 when this article was written in 2022 and 6 within 2021. Obviously, we don't have the numbers for 2023 at this moment, and I don't know the 2024 numbers because it hasn't ended yet, but that number alone is all recorded on what is called the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, which you can go on and voluntarily register any sightings that you have on the loch. This was created by Gary Campbell, one of the stories we went over in the first half. He is also in charge of the newsletter that is dedicated to Nessie.
Oh, no, not the newsletter.
Which you can also sign up for, and you will get regular updates, the new sightings, any specific lore, et cetera, particularly for anything I didn't have time to cover, which I feel like we had covered quite a bit. But despite this huge number of sightings on the register, Gary does stress that the majority of claim sightings can be explained and are not included. So if there's somebody who's just trying to troll, Gary knows. Okay.
That's right.
He's not some Marmaduke scammer mammer. Okay.
That's right.
In addition, any registered sightings that are later explained or proven to be a hoax that are removed kind of helps narrow down what's actually unexplained in terms of sighting. So realistically, if you're looking at a holistic view, it's about 10 to 20 unexplained sightings each year, which is still a high number. But they do sift through them, of course, and make sure nobody's giving them like a toy with a putty head stuck on it.
Right.
The last thing I want to touch on is what Nessie actually looks like, right? And not because I've seen her personally and invited her for dinner, but there are, of course, real things outside of the hoaxes that are kind of helpful in getting an image of what overall she might look like.
Right.
There's not real photos. However, when you think of Nessie, we're talking something large. They have a long-necked serpentine kind of look. They're specifically in the water, though some claim that she's walked on land 1 or 2 times, but that was also a hoax.
That's weird. And I don't like that.
I know. Stay in the water. With one or more humps rising from the water. Additionally, she's very dark in color, and there's like a high peat content, so underwater visibility is also severely reduced, which doesn't help when you're trying to take those underwater photos, but it also doesn't help when you have dark on dark. So if she is dark and the lock is dark, it's very hard to suss out the difference between objects and water, right?
Camouflage. Yeah.
Correct. She's real good at it, obviously. It's so reduced because of the peat content that there's no visibility at all from 9 meters and below. And while the multi-humped sea serpent-like creature is most often described, other sightings include black scaly dots in the water, whale-like objects, elephant-like head, which I think is a little far-fetched, of course, long-necked beast, and something like an upturned boat, which is what other people describe. The description of a prehistoric animal from 1933, of course, the suggested survivor of the plesiosaurs, it's a flippered marine reptile that coexisted with the dinos. Further prehistoric connections came with the discovery of
what is called the Pterichthyoids malariae fossil. And this was actually near the Loch Ness. So that gives you a little bit of kind of a closer range, because again, the problem with the plesiosaur is it was oceanic and not freshwater. So that's why a lot of people felt it couldn't be that. But with this new discovery, with this new fossil that was actually found near the freshwaters of Loch Ness, it's a small ancient armored fish that typically lived in freshwater lakes. It did have flippers, and that was its main mode of transportation through the water. The fossil was actually nicknamed Pessy, or prehistoric Nessie. And you can actually see this in the Inverness Museum and Art Gallery on display. But we're talking about a small ancient armored fish. It could be a precursor to what we think Nessie is now, but in terms of size difference, it's a very vast one, right? As far as science is concerned, the general consensus is that Nessie is just something that hasn't been discovered yet, apparently. So they're not discounting it. They have, of course, attempted their expeditions like we talked about. They were unfruitful. It is what it is.
Yeah.
In 1962, the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau began surface surveillance of the loch, quickly establishing connection between calm water and Nessie sightings, which again is that wave action that we talked about. Gives you a lot of illusions. It's like an oasis in the desert, but you're now talking about wave actions in the water.
Right.
The brain and the mind and the eyes are trying to put something together when it can't understand what it's seeing.
Right.
They often occur, usually what they're saying, there are conditions that prompt a lot of these sightings, and it's only on the top layer of the water in the loch warms and cools with the season. The deeper the water, of course, stays at a constant temperature, and this is around 5.5 degrees Celsius year round, making Loch Ness prone to these mirages. And these occur most often in calm weather. They make objects look larger. And many long-necked monster sightings were shown to have that long-necked kind of appearance. So, you know, what can you say? You know, you're
literally nothing.
Nothing, because your brain tries to make sense of it. Of course, other sightings can be attributed apparently to wind slicks, seals, which I think makes sense a little bit.
Yeah.
Deer swimming in the loch really threw me. I was like, I also don't think I would look at a deer and be like, it's a monster. But I don't know. Logs makes a lot of sense. Floating logs.
Totally.
Makes a lot of sense. And birds flying past the camera. I'm not.
If you have a really bad camera.
Right. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. So there are, you know, lots of investigations on top of the water that have been unfruitful. There's also been these investigations on the bottom that have been unfruitful. There have been about 40 significant sonar contacts in general.
Interesting.
So they have pinged on something. Some were explained. Methane gas bubbles released by decaying vegetation, which is very common. Seals entering the loch via the river, making big splashes. They're very rubber big boys, so that happens. And some still remain unexplained, like many of the other pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Loch Ness Project team did launch Operation Deep Scan in 1987, a fleet of 20 boats using the sonar as they slowly moved along the loch in a line. Again, lots of echoes were reported. Some of them couldn't be definitive. It's the same story over and over again, right? The bottom line is, it can't fully be proven, but it also can't really be disproven either. And that's what's so fun about cryptids, right? Like, it could be, but it also could be nothing.
Right.
And that's why it's fun.
It's similar to the saying, like, when you hear hoofbeats, think horse, not zebra. Or, you know, it's a very common medical saying, but I think it applies here too, where typically, it's probably not going to be like a giant monster, but like it could possibly be a giant monster.
Right. So anyway.
So this is my theory. This is what I think. So I'm a big proponent of like a whale that just like lost its way.
A lost whale.
Yeah. From like the Ice Age or whatever.
Okay.
And has adapted to the
fresh water, right? Mm-hmm. So like mm-hmm. a giant ass whale. Mm-hmm. Or you've seen koi ponds, right? So like I feel like,
okay.
And you know how koi fish and like goldfish, like there's no
sure
definite size, like they could get as big as they want.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's a giant carp.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Okay. That's fair.
It's giving Pokemon.
I love how we went from Fairly Odd Parents to Pokemon in right. one episode. It's quite yeah. a jump.
So that's my little aside theory situation. Yeah. Okay. I think it's some fish that has just grown to massive proportions or mm-hmm. a whale that got lost.
So you think it's a fish. You don't think it's a reptile based.
No.
Okay.
I think it's a fish or like a lake snake.
Lake snake is fun to say. Yeah. Lake snake.
Yeah. I don't,
but that would infer it's a reptile.
Well, yes, but like the idea that it has legs and feet bother mm-hmm. me. So we're just not gonna.
Can you get rid of those, please?
We're not gonna entertain that possibility.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the problem is with so many thoughts about what it could be. Like when they thought it was a plesiosaur based on the fake photo, like, mm-hmm. yeah, conceivably that would make sense in reality, right? Like, sure. But there's yeah. so many things that it could be. But unfortunately I feel like people get an image stuck in their head and they're like, well, it couldn't possibly be this, but who knows? It could be a whale. It could be a giant carp. It could right. also be a seabird, which is concerning. So, you know, I would also like to say, I'd like to reiterate, this one was not creepy. Okay. Everybody, I feel like for the most part, even the younger generation knows about Nessie, or at least have heard about Nessie. She's not that scary. It's just kind of like a wonder of the world, right? Mm-hmm. All my other cryptid episodes are going to be a little spooky. So I just want to kind of put that PSA out there. If you're not into Spooktober content, that's okay. Me neither. I spooked myself doing the research for a lot of these, and I am not a fan of some of the things I'm going to talk about, but I feel like it's fun. And so we're just going to roll through it together. But if you can't, feel free to skip out on the next couple cryptid episodes that I'll be doing. Blair still has other things that she's doing that are going to be spooky as well. So if mm-hmm. it's just not for you, I get it. I'm a big baby and normally I wouldn't, but I'm too deep. So anyway, that's all I got today.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to wrap this up. Feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns, or episode topic suggestions at meanerforconscientpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram or TikTok. We be there. Mm-hmm. Every time we post a podcast, we be there.
We be there.
And yeah, don't forget to rate us 5 stars anywhere you listen to podcasts. And we'll see you next week.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening.
Cheers.
Cheers.